a comic book CEO? See, we need to talk. You need to take it.
Yeah, I am the president and CEO of Apogee Comics, independent comic book company, publishing company out here in South Texas.
Yes. And that's stuff we're going to talk about now that we're live on the Banff podcast today, talking about fantasy and Forgotten Ruin with Nick Cole and Jason Unspach. How are you guys doing today?
We are doing great. We're doing great. Thank you for having us on. Jason is in his realtor avatar, even though he's not a realtor. And I'm here. And it's just, you know, it's great to meet you guys because we interact over on Facebook at the Galaxy's Edge insiders page and the fan page and stuff like that. And you got Walt is, you know, our super number one leader, influencer.
I try to be the evangelist. I do what I can. It's not my fault that the people I give your book to can't read.
Yeah. Well, you know, crayons. Well, comic books too. So, you know, it's nice. I mean, the cool thing is, you know, whatever, talking about anything, but actually it's just cool to connect. And if you guys game, we want to come game. That'd be fun.
Oh, we'll do that online. If you're going to threaten us with a good time like that, we're going to take you up on it.
Oh yeah.
You've never gamed until you've gamed with Jason. He is the best DMing role player you've ever met.
I've heard that. And I've also heard there was a Conan impersonation that might have gone without an Academy Award.
Oh my gosh. It was psychotic. I was hitting on my wife left and right. It was her first time.
And riding shotgun today, we have the Banff CEO and ultimate prestidigitator, because I love that word, Mike Lafferty. How are you today, sir?
Hey, doing all right. I got to tell you, it's rough being a CEO of a geek media podcast. I mean, just the groupies alone at the same, it's hard, man. It's real
man,
hard.
Man, save some vagina for the rest of us, man.
I'm trying. There's a quota. Hey, Nick and Jason, wanted to thank you. Walt turned me on to one of your stories, one of your introductory stories for the Galaxy's Edge series, Tin Man. Really enjoyed that.
Oh, I thought it was the erotic fiction.
Hey, Walt, if you got a copy of the erotic fiction, send it my way.
I got you. I got you, brother.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. Yeah. We really dug, you know, we wanted to write a cool intro into the Galaxy's Edge series, and we like robots too. And so we wanted to do a robot that actually got PTSD and, you know, kind of a little crossover into Vietnam, because it was a prequel to sort of the modern Stormtroopers in Afghanistan version that is Galaxy's Edge, and it resonated. It was really, really good. Yeah, we liked it. He said modestly.
Yeah, we'll definitely put the link up in the show notes. But I got a feeling this is getting a lot of exposure as it is. But yeah, that was a great story.
I really enjoyed the fact that it also kind of tied into some of those stories you heard coming out of Vietnam, where you had all these pilots being ordered back to base after horrendous battles were going on. And these pilots just kept saying, no, we're going back for these guys. You're not going to stop us. Court-martial shows later.
My dad actually owned an airline, and one of our pilots was the guy who got the Distinguished Flying Cross and the Silver Star. And I still talk to him, but that was exactly what happened. He kept going up to this hill night after night after night, and lost his co-pilot doing it. You know, the deck was, you know, covered in blood and stuff like that. And he was just some guy. I don't even think he was really hardcore military. He just liked to fly. And so he just kept going back, and and he's still around and kicking today, and ended up flying for Singapore Airlines. And he just had their big I think it was, what was the name? It was like the 182nd AWF. But anyways, they're still together. And so, yeah, those guys were hardcore. And even today, guys are still doing that. But I always thought helicopters were cool. I would have liked to have flown those.
Hey, I agree.
It just occurred to me, we got a bunch of listeners who may or may not have heard about the Galaxy's Edge book series. Can when you guys give them the brief elevator pitch and tell them where they can find out more about it?
Jason?
Yeah, I can do that. Yeah, so Nick already used like one of our best buzz catchphrases, which is Stormtroopers in Afghanistan. And we wanted to write a science fiction story that was evocative of Star Wars, because we both kind of grew up loving Star Wars. But, you know, Star Wars is a lot of World War II, and we are friends with a lot of guys who served in the war that's been going back since September 11th. And we were like, well, why don't we write from this perspective? Like, why don't we just go science fiction, but have modern warfighters? Like, let's have let's have the stormtroopers be rangers and let's have them actually be able to hit what they're shooting. And so we started with that premise and then we expanded it out and it's just taken off from there. So yeah, if you like action and science fiction and you like that kind of Star Wars feel, but a war where they actually use tactics and purple hair will not automatically qualify you for admiralship, then Galaxy's Edge is probably your bag.
Yeah. It's kind of funny that taps into a vein, but like that, like a lot of people think that was our original intention was to sort of go after Star Wars. But when we started writing this, like Star Wars hadn't committed its major malfunctions yet. It was still kind of a go for most of us.
Yeah. We were still hopeful.
And then suddenly we tapped into this like huge zeitgeist of anger. You know, I mean, people were already kind of upset about the canon wipe, but then when they kind of saw what was coming, you know, how classic characters were being treated, how the military was being treated, that's when we knew, like, okay, let's, I think here's an argument. Star Wars is about the struggle for the soul of the Jedi. What we wanted to make Galaxy's Edge is a struggle for the soul of the stormtrooper. The Legionnaires are stand-in for that. And that was just kind of where we wanted to go. And then it morphed away from there. And that's the struggle between Jace and I, is how much of the galaxy do we expand? And then how much do we stay like sort of on the Legionnaire stormtrooper guy, the kill teams and stuff like that, which is where people really resonate. Our next new little series that we're going to do is actually going to be what do we call it? Serial, but it's going to be about guys who are working private contractor after being out of the Legion. So that's where a lot of the readers actually are. So I think that'll be cool.
I'm super stoked for that as a former Minuteman private contractor myself.
Exactly.
You know, yeah. It'd be cool to see how that lines up in a science fiction vein.
Fucking
yeah. It's fun in the science fiction vein, and also, you know, the getting advanced, hopefully access to equipment, doing things that could sometimes be considered murky and stuff like that. But we also want to, you know, and it would be good to talk about that specifically with you. We want to touch on issues that are different than the military, you know, experience there. So I think the cool thing about writing any kind of science fiction series is it's fun to play with blasters and bots and bounty hunters, but at the same time, you do take all the real human stuff out to the stars. And that's, I think, sometimes where I disagree with, like, you know, the whole sort of Elon Musk, SJW crowd. Like, we're going to go to the stars and we're going to be better people. Nah, we're still going to be assholes.
No, we're going to be some ruthless conquering bastards. Yeah. I mean, that's as long as there's a 75th Ranger Regiment.
Yeah, exactly. That's our contribution to the galaxy. Yeah. Nice. One burning cube village at a time. Oh my god.
I got your one of my laptops, I have the cube skull decal on there, and I have people ask that all the time. I'll be in a coffee shop just typing away and somebody will be like, what is that, what do you have there? And I try to make up something nice, because if I go into the backstory about it, they'll either A, run me out of the coffee shop where I really enjoy the coffee, or, you know, B, they'll want to talk about it for 2 hours and then, you know, I won't get any typing done, which, yeah, you know, it's a thing. But
I think the fun thing is, like, I mean, not the fun thing, but like, I mean, it's actually, that's a good conversational piece. Jason and I were just talking about that yesterday because of the true story where that comes from and the guy that happened to. And there's a great Family Guy episode where, you know, people have used it as a meme where someone says something and then Stewie and the dog's faces hit the floor. That's kind of that moment. Like, if you said something, well, it actually comes from the science fiction story, which is based on this guy's experience that one of the writers knew, and it's about hacking off the heads of these aliens with a tomahawk.
You
know? Yeah, because jaw hits the floor in the coffee house.
You know us. We like our tomahawks.
Yeah.
Hence the hat. Using and reaching over for my intentional blunt force segue, let's transition into fantasy, because sure. About 4 or 5 months ago, you guys stunned your insiders and stunned your readership by saying, hey, we're going to do a fantasy series. Shh, not yet. And you know, this has been coming around for the last few months, and I'm sure you guys had it planned out long before you even announced it. Can you tell us a little bit about Forgotten Ruin? And we know kind of the premise, but what about the story? Because we really don't have any insight into the story yet.
The story, as we're developing it, and the thing that we wanted to do, we wanted, you know, okay, so we have this great audience in Galaxy's Edge, which is, you know, people like yourself, people with trigger time in Afghanistan and Iraq. We also are starting to get a lot of women. So that's good for you guys, because it's weird. Like, women want to read stories about real dudes. And so that's
kind of a dying breed in 2018.
Yeah, exactly. But, you know, you can, I don't want to go down the path of disparaging a lot of other science fiction and fantasy, but sometimes you can read some fairly goofy stuff. And so here we are, you know, Jason and I are always about, okay, what's our audience, knowing our audience, you know, knowing your unit capabilities, that kind of thing, what you can really do. And so we looked at our audience and we knew that we needed to diversify in some way, shape, or form. We both, you know, our fantasy gamers, role playing, you know, our D&D street cred is old school. And we wanted to write something like that. And what we saw generally with fantasy is that a lot of the times it can get a little light, a little ethereal, a little away from everything. It can fall into the trap of sort of Lucas and Star Wars of, you know, okay, here we have the farm boy who rises to the top. He gets the magic sword. He defeats the emperor. Things get out of perspective. And even stories that, like, you know, Abercrombie's story and stuff like that, where you can have some really, or, you know, Cook's the Black Company and stuff like that. You can have some good hardcore military fiction, but there's always this danger that it's going to get super important. And so what we did with the Galaxy's Edge series is, even though, you know, we brought in this, you know, sort of Darth Vader-esque character, and even though we brought in this young girl who's starting to acquire these weird powers, and even though we have this sort of mythic bounty hunter and this Han Solo guy who's you know, a wisecracker, the story at the end of the day is Legionnaires. The story at the end of the day is that sometimes you got to put some hard men on an objective who are willing to do the hard things that no one else is going to do. What we wanted to do in fantasy is we wanted to do that same thing. One, to curate to the reader base, because we have this, just what we've learned from marketing and books and stuff like that, is just because you're really doing great at Space Marine doesn't necessarily, we can say to you and say like, hey, we're going to go write fantasy stories. You go with us. So we had to do something attractive, and we had to say, well, if they like these stories about hard men doing hard things, maybe they will like them. And now it'll have elves and swords and, you know, vampires and dark lords and stuff like that, werewolves. So that was our thing is, okay, let's take military operators and let's move them into fantasy. So let's take the Rangers out of the woods and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And let's actually make them real Rangers. There's a whole backstory to why the fantasy world kind of looks like Europe and why the Rangers are known as the 75. You'll figure that out down the road, but you could probably put two and two together. It definitely draws those conclusions. The Rangers speak in a cant that's very military. And it turns out that, yeah, there are these kingdoms that kind of cling to the Great Inner Sea, which looks a lot like the Mediterranean. But the world is basically a very dark, dangerous place that's overrun by monsters. And it's actually the 75 that, despite all these sort of tenuous human kingdoms, it's actually the Rangers that are actually running the entire world. They're just doing it in a very sort of like, okay, we're going to go over here and do an operation. Okay, we know that this sort of warlord is forming here. We're going to run around. And they realize they have lower numbers, but they have really good skills. And so they draw from the best of all these nations, recruit these guys to be in the 75, and they basically curate and manage the world one arrow at a time.
Oh, I love that.
Speed, violence of action.
Right?
I gotta tell you, Forgotten Ruin is a great title, but have you considered, you know, just talking now, I was thinking hard man doing hard things with elves.
Well, I think that was a video in the 90s from
that is the porno spinoff.
It's the title of my new Amazon novel single. You can buy now for $1.99. Hey, so it's a game. We sometimes have gamers listen to our podcast. We should really mention your guys' gamer royalty connection with Forgotten Ruin.
Yeah, who did you get to do this? And how did this even come about? Did you guys go, you know, we should do this for our own stories?
Jason, do you want to? I don't want to monopolize.
Yeah, you don't want. No, it's okay. So yeah, we knew we wanted to have what we call a lead magnet, like something that would get people kind of in the door so we could talk to them and sell them on the book series, because that's the primary thing. And for Galaxy's Edge, it's Tin Man and it's the community, I think. But for Forgotten Ruins, since we were going brand new, we thought, well, let's just make an RPG and we'll give it away. And we'll try to make it feel like that old school Advanced Dungeons and Dragons, where it was really lethal, where it was just kind of fun and hard, but not overly complicated. You know, not the type of game where everybody has an instant built-in backstory and they're never going to die and they're perfect at everything. We didn't want that kind of game. So Nick called me and he said, hey, I reached out to Jim Ward. And for people who might not know, he was one of Gary Gygax's buddies. He was right there. He worked for TSR. He's written some iconic material for Dungeons & Dragons. And he said, I just reached out and asked him if he wanted to make a game. And we had a really long, nice conversation. And he said, yeah. And so just by Nick just reaching out of the blue, we end up having this legendary epic designer. And we gave our input and we kind of said, here are some things we think would be cool, just features that we haven't seen in other places. And he went to work on it. And so now we're right at the point where we're filling in all the art and we are getting our alpha testers ready to kind of pick it apart.
Yeah. And then once that's done, we're just going to give it away to everybody as a lead magnet. So you can have it for free. It also comes with a really brutal tournament module that Jim developed, where the Rangers have to go into this thing called the Temple of Fangs and they've got to retrieve an artifact. That's actually the crux of book one. But now you can make any kind of character you want. You could make a ranger, you could make a sorceress, you can make a wizard, all these, we call our thieves rascals. We put in a paladin. And you can go in and try to do it. The way that we want to do it is each module we release kind of informs the 6-book series that's coming a little bit more. But Jim was the guy who invented Gamma World. He also invented Metamorphosis Alpha. In Dungeons and Dragons, he wrote Deities and Demigods. He is a really cool dude. And I got inspired to actually talk to him by something that Jason did. If you've ever read the Star Wars books, there was a famous author, her name is Karen Travis. She wrote the best clone. Well, Jason actually just reached out to her and said, hey, want to come write in Galaxy's Edge? And she's like, she's this, I'll say it nicely, but the way that I'm going to say it might make it sound like denigratory, but it's actually cool. She's this wacky old British lady who loves the military and loves men more than like she even told us, like, you need to write stories for men. Like, that's how hardcore she was. But a lot of people, like, hands down agree she is the best Star Wars author ever. So Jason just reached out to her and said, hey, want to come write in Galaxy's Edge? Because she was pissed off at Star Wars. And she's like, sure, blimey, you know, chip, chip, cheerio. So she's actually coming out with a trilogy. And, like, I'm like, well, I mean, not that I'm competitive with Jason. I'm like, all right, I'll go get my own legend. And so, like, basically, Jason and I have become, like, I don't know, maybe we're fulfilling some sort of sociopathic serial killer thing where we can't actually kill famous people, but we go out and get them to work for us. And that's kind of the same thing. Yeah. Oh, but you can. Well, Randy Quaid's on our list.
That's how we got Nick Garber in on to jump on the show. You know,
yeah.
Mike Lafferty went and got Dan Abnett and I got Nick. So I think Mike's still ahead. But,
yeah, you know. you really wasted an opportunity. I mean, holy shit. Wow. Yeah. I mean, I'm flattered, but I also am sad for you.
Yeah.
No, but Jim is a really cool guy, and it's what he brought to the game. I think, so how do you get people to get in a fight on the internet? You just mentioned D&D and what edition you like. So I'm pretty sure everybody here has a strong opinion about D&D and stuff like that. For me, the golden age really was first edition, and that's what I said, let's make that. And he's always kind of leery about getting sued, so he wanted to make, you know, like, okay, well, I'm going to make that, but I'm going to make some different things. And so we attacked also alignment, which was a thing that, you know, was kind of wacky, and so we changed it to demeanor. And, like, I think what came out of that was a way for people to understand how enemies, monsters, NPCs would respond to you better than the alignment system did with our demeanor system. That was actually all Jason right there. I got to give credit where credit's due. I just wanted to basically have the artwork of Errol Otis. So that was my contribute.
Nice. And how closely have you guys gotten to work with Mr. Ward?
I would say almost to the point of like, there's this, like a lot. And there's this point where like, he'll say, well, do you want, like, it's like that episode of Seinfeld where he'll say, do you want to use this nut or do you want to use this hinge? And we're like, just use the hinge, Jim. So he's kind of like, do you want this or that? And we're like, you're the genius. You just do it. And then later we're like, well, that's stupid, Jim, fix this. No, it's been really closely. And now like in the beta over on Discord, which if any of you actually want to jump in, this Saturday is the first play test and we can get you access to the rules. But Jim's actually going to run a game on Roll20. And so we're going to watch that
Saturday. Let's do this.
Yeah, let's do this. Okay, we'll get you into the DM me your email address and I'll add you to the Discord.
You guys. But,
it's going to be, even if it fails gloriously, the cool thing is I got to game with Jim Ward.
Yeah.
It's
going
to be tight, y'all.
Jason, did you want to say something?
No, Nick covered it really well, but he's a cool guy. Jim Ward is a really cool guy. He is an old school gentleman.
That's true.
I think we both just love him to death. It was kind of, you never know what you're going to expect when you are working with someone who's had a lot of success. And we've certainly met people who that success went to their head and it stayed there. And that's why people say never meet your heroes. But in Jim's case, he is just lights out awesome.
My observation is this from, you know, the whole culture right now, especially corporate gaming or corporate entertainment of any kind of thing, everything is hot and new and young. And you watch people, you know, that sort of make the scene, suddenly it goes to their head and you can't book an interview with them. You can't. We used to have an old podcast where we'd play D&D and we tried to get some of the big names and it was like literally trying to get Michael Jackson. And, you know, you're like, okay. But because of the emphasis on the new and the young, there are all these masters, and Errol Otis was the same way, that are just sitting out there waiting for someone to call him. And Errol Otis told us straight up, who's, you know, he, if people don't know, he's one of the more iconic D&D artists. He did sort of the weird tentacly stuff, the most famous cover where the sorceress and the warrior are fighting the Hydra, you know, he did that one. And we just reached out to him and he said, you know, no one ever calls me or asks me to do anything because they just figure I'm too busy or I don't want to be approached. And then when he told us his rate, we're like, you're making way too little money. You know, like it's weird, but all of these legends are not being utilized in this youth culture. So,
well, yeah, we had Jeff D, the guy who did most of the art for Deities and Demigods. He's been on the podcast a few times. Yeah. He's a great guy, but yeah, it's you know, RPGs aren't like podcasts. They don't live the high life the way we do. So
yeah, that reminds me, I've got to fly off in my private helicopter at 1500 hours to another meeting.
That you've appropriately prepared for.
Right. I'm gonna sabo out and sabo in. It's gonna be great.
Hey, we should really mention you've got a ton of sidebars. I've been reading over your alpha rules from Jim Ward talking about his days back at TSR. A lot of them are about, you know, gaming with Gygax, working with Gygax. This is really, I mean, not to grab the phrase, but it's kind of an old school revolution love letter. I think a lot of almost our guys would be hardcore into this.
That's what we told him. We just said, like, listen, you're our bucket list. And, you know, like, don't take that as morbid. But, you know, for him, because he is older. And we just said, we really want you to, you know, as if you were doing it from the ground up or whatever. But what came out of that are, like, actually, not to be, like, completely gay, but some beautiful remembrances that he has about Gygax. And I think the one that kind of really stunned me is when he was talking to Gary and he said, you know, like, aren't you afraid that, you know, the players, that there are too many monsters for people to choose from? And so, like, it kind of shows you, like, the genius level instinct that Gygax had. He asked him a question. He said, okay, how do you kill a vampire? And Jim immediately, like, Jim is very, just very linear. He's like, okay, you get, you know, garlic water and you get steaks and you have these things and you go after the vampire. And he's great. Okay, how do you kill a quicksling? And Jim's like, I don't know what a quick sling is. He's like, exactly. Because that, like, it's really weird. But when you talk to people about D&D, yeah, it's about whatever anybody's personal objectives are. I want to get treasure. I want to be like a ninth level paladin. I want to have all these things. But the key sort of like cool thing about it is, from our little boy, you know, 12-year-old, 11-year-old thing, is you're going to go kill monsters. And the greatest thing about monsters, the thing that separates those that do and those that don't, is you're kind of facing this fear, and there should be that fear. And that's, you know, what Gary was saying is, like, you should kind of be afraid of the unknown. That's what makes you a murder hobo, is that you, even though you're afraid, you're willing to go murder for gold and prizes and chicks. And I think that that story really kind of illustrated it. And that's when the thing that we're working with Errol Otis is, we wanted a commission of the two of them having that conversation as their famous characters. So for Gygax, that's Mordenkainen. And for Jim, that's this character, a 14th level wizard that he had called Drawmage. And so we had Errol Otis draw that conversation between these two wizards, where Gygax is basically telling him, this is how you play D&D. And we're like, okay, that's cool.
Yeah, and the cool thing with that is, we didn't ask him to do that at all. Like, yeah, we got the first draft, and then we see all these just amazing sidebars, and we're like, whoa, yeah, that was just him going above and beyond.
Yeah, yeah, it was cool.
Nice. Now, you guys also you also have some really cool design choices in this game too. Like, instead of, you know, every game that other than, you know, a couple of the really narrative ones that have sprung up in the last few years, I mean, everybody has some sort of hit points, this points, that points. You know, you guys decided to go with, like, straight up wounds. I mean, that was a really neat choice. You know, this kind of weapon.
Jason.
Yeah. Can you talk about that, Jason?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the idea was, like you guys know, you can get like a small wound and that's great. The problem with hit points is, well, one of the things we'd see when we would play is, all right, as a DM, you're constantly trying to figure out, all right, you just got hit by a barbarian holding this gigantic axe, but it didn't hurt that bad, you know, because he rolled a 2 on his thing. And so we kind of had the idea of, like, you know, different weapons and different strength levels, when it connects, it's all factored in. It's either going to hurt a lot or it's going to hurt a little. And if you get hurt a lot too much, you're going to die, right? Like if there's a giant half orc with a club and he's like whacked you 7 times in a row, it never made sense to us that you just keep being fine, right? You're like, oh yeah, it's okay. It's all good because the hit points are still there. So we have a system where you can get hit on a minor level and it's just like a cut and you shrug it off. It's a sprain, it's something like that. But there are characters or weapons or critical roles that can eat up sort of your maximum threshold. And that's when, like, all right, I'm really bleeding. I need some attention. And if this happens too much more, I'm going to die. You know, it's the difference between, you know, being shot straight up and just having that kind of gray, like, it still hurts, but that was the concept behind it. We said, let's get away from hit points and, hey, as long as I've got one hit point, I'm fine, and get to something where, you know, there's effects here as a result of combat.
Yeah. You got to have some bell ringers. You've got to up the stakes. And that was another thing we wanted to go back to. Like, I would talk to people who've played fifth edition. I haven't played it. And they would say, like, yeah, it's great, it's fun. I never feel like I'm going to die. And we wanted to get back to, yeah, you're going to probably die. So in this playtest session that we're going to do Saturday, Jim flat out said, you need to bring two characters. They need to have great stats. They need to be third level because I'm going to kill you. And we're like, fun. That's exactly how we want it to be. I want to get killed by Jim Ward, who is a notoriously lethal DM.
All right, Walt, help me build my characters.
I got you, buddy. I got you.
Okay. Well, Ranger scared.
Yeah. Don't be scared. We got this.
I mean, Ranger's still going to do it because Ranger dumb, but
Ranger must do.
Ranger must do. Ranger going to Ranger.
Yeah, I got you.
No, that sounds really cool. Because I'm not a huge gamer per se. I've played maybe a couple of games of D&D.
He's gamer curious.
I'm gamer curious. I don't know what flag that is, but I'm pretty sure it has a skull and crossbones. And maybe a hatchet. Tomahawk.
Yeah, I know that it's now a Forgotten Ruin marketing shirt.
Yeah. You know, so with the having the injuries, the wounding capability to it, how is that determined? Is that through a secondary roll of the die, or
Basically, like certain types of weapons, as I'm still kind of understanding the game as it's written, will give you either, or like certain spells or powers will give you a minor wound. But then, like when you roll the die, like if you're like say a warrior class, if you, and it's all 3d6. If you roll this much to hit, then it's going to be a major wound. If you roll like in the lower bracket, then it's going to be a minor wound. And then I think like we had to make a gladiator class because a lot of the human society that this is coming out of is very Rome influenced. That class actually is actually better at doing specific types of wounds. So we wanted to reflect it in that way. But I just thought, you know, it was brilliant on Jason's part to get away from hit points and to get into wounds. And in a certain way, what I'm kind of hoping is that, like, that actually forces people to, you don't want to force people, but, like, it brings a role-playing element in subconsciously. You're aware of how wounded you are as opposed to, well, I had 38 hit points. Now I'm down to one. I'm like, I'm going to leap over the chasm. Probably not. You know, yeah.
right.
Yeah. It kind of gives the a little sense of mortality with the character. Like a minor wound could.
Yeah, I mean, it is called the role playing game, and it's fun to create things that, you know, not everybody is a role player, not everybody is a comedian or an actor or a teacher or a trainer. Not everybody has those skills, but they do like to roll dice, and it's kind of weird. All the role playing people that I grew up with as a kid would have basically been sort of math heavy, AV, science club kind of people. These are not people that are necessarily given to role playing. But if you put in the mechanics that allow them to role play it sort of with numbers and with the system, then it creates an overall story that I think can be a lot more fun.
Well, what I think is interesting about it is that it adds a sense of realism to the encounters that you're going to have. So, I mean, just to put it in a military aspect, there's a difference between taking a shot to the arm and taking one in the plate.
Yeah.
Exactly. I take it in the plate. Yeah, I'm going to be bruised up. Those would be hit points. But I take one in the arm, depending on how bad I take it, it could be a bad thing.
Yeah. That was, see, we did this in Galaxy's Edge. We had this cool character we made called Tyrus Rex. And and Tyrus Rex is awesome. And he's immortal practically because they did science on him. And then we killed him in the second book just to show how immortal he is. Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah.
I guess they science the shit out of that one.
Yeah. He's killed in the second book, which was my brilliant genius marketing move, which was like, hey, let's take this character that everybody loves and kill him and deny access to him. So that's the kind of genius you're working with in my thing. But then Jason's like, hey, you know, he could come back in sort of like these retro cool tales that harken back to the original sort of Star Wars novels. And that's where he got this really cool second life. But the problem is like you have to hurt this character constantly. But then he's kind of nigh invulnerable. And so those have been the fun moments with that, in like dealing how to shoot a guy who's probably not going to die, but then up the stakes in the novel. And so that probably in some way, shape or form influenced our thinking on this. We wanted to make it so that you're probably going to die, you're going to get wounds, but at the same time, you're going to get through this, and then there's goods and prizes, you know?
Absolutely. And just as a side note, Galactic Outlaws, right at toward the, you know, three quarters of the end of the book when that happened,
yeah.
My wife looked at me walking out the door and she said, where are you going with two handguns, a rifle, and a tomahawk? And I said, I need to go talk to somebody.
Got to say, man, about a horse.
She said, why don't you wait till the next book? Maybe things get better. I'm like, that makes sense and involves a lot less jail time. So yeah,
there was a little tear coming down out of one eye. And you
thank you, voice of reason.
My wife is the voice of reason. She's the reason that I still have both legs.
Yeah, it was weird. When we wrote that and we were kind of coming – and the way that Jason and I approached that book is we basically wanted to write True Grit in space, you know, two bounty hunters basically going after the same target. And I don't think we kind of intended to kill that character, but it just made sense at that moment because that we had to reveal how bad the big bad was. Like that you can be hardcore and your skills can be up and you can have everything, but you can meet some things in the galaxy that should honestly frighten you, going back to that whole monsters thing. And that's this character that we've been bringing out of the slow background, which is our Darth Vader. we didn't just want to give him like a Star Destroyer and the ability to choke out his employees. We wanted to say, okay, here's the toughest guy in the universe, and he doesn't make it 30 seconds against the worst guy in the world. Yeah. So, yeah.
I've always wondered about Darth Vader and whether he got negative reviews on Yelp for doing all that crap.
I'm a Yelper, and you're getting a bad review.
Yeah. So what are some of the fun aspects that will differentiate Forgotten Ruin from something like D&D? I mean, we've already mentioned the wounding system. I like the attack method that you guys have. It makes it reminiscent of D&D, but it doesn't scream D&D.
Right.
How you guys render attacks, how level plays into it, not just different numbers on a different chart, but you have right. modifiers that go in and stuff like that. What else can we look forward to in Forgotten Ruin that will give D&D players an alternative?
Yeah. I think the cool thing about the attack and the damage chart and stuff like that is that was Jim, you know, and as much as I love first edition, yeah, there are things that you could get into it and say, this is not realistic and things like that. But I think the cool thing that came out of Jim's development is, you know, that's 40, 50 plus years of going through things and finding what works and what doesn't work, which is how you actually find brilliant stuff, is by finding out all the things that don't work. And so I think that's where Jim came from. I think what makes it a good, what'll make it revolutionary is it gets back to, instead of having skills, you have professions, which is something that's been done. It's nothing new or revolutionary, but it's not a mandatory thing that you have to do that. You could just have this class and be that. The thing that we tried to push forward to Jim is that we didn't want people to walk in and make instant characters with instant access to instant back histories. You know, that when sometimes you read people's tweets on, if you follow the D&D hashtag on Twitter, and people are like, great, I'm playing my first game of D&D today. My character is a half god, demi elf, tiefling, you know, and it's got it all mapped out. And I think what I liked originally about D&D is, like, you know, you walked in, you know, in 1981, you walked into a game store and there were a bunch of math nerds there, and you're like, can I play D&D? And they're like, here's a character, you know, like, you had no idea what you were, but, you know, just like the military, your deeds revealed who you were, you know, the tabs that you earned, the jumps that you took, the things that you did when you walked through the PX, people knew exactly what your deal was, you know, or they didn't need to read your records jacket that you know, may have. Like some people, they'll try to intimate, oh, this is me, this is how great I am. You know, like, and that's what we wanted to bring forth in this game. Your deeds are who make your character. So you're going to start out as a shiftless murder hobo on the edge of normal society. And there's probably a reason for that. People don't want you around. But again, you're the hard guy who's willing to go do the hard things. And there's goods and treasure. So every mechanic in the game was designed to push forward. The things that you're doing are going to make you who you are. I think what we wanted to do with the magic system is we wanted to get away. If you ever played the old game Gamma World, it was really cool. The powers were based on your intellect. You know, like, and even if you weren't like a magic user, quote unquote, in Gamma World, you could still have, like, you know, oh, you're a warrior with an 18 intellect. Well, what good does that do you? Well, it actually makes you really resistant to magic powers, or, you know, like in the Gamma World setting. So we tried to emphasize to James, we wanted to move away from like magic and mana and spells to, wizards are actually guys that have power. And they wield these power. These are powers that are innate to the universe, and they've learned how to use that power and manipulate it. And they're growing in that power. It's a subtle difference, but I wanted them to be more like superheroes, as in, you know, Iceman uses ice. So that's the, you know, again, that's a way to sort of manipulate people into becoming sort of a role-playing type specific character, forming their characters through the things that they do, as opposed to, you know, like the average MMO, I just collect everything, you know, like I'm trading in my ancient legendary sword for a more ancienter, more legendarier sword. Yeah. I just ripped that off from somebody today. I thought it was funny.
Ancient engineer.
Yeah.
Okay.
Have you got anything?
No, I don't have anything at all. Like, Nick will tell you, we both like fantasy, and we both like military science fiction. And like, I'm 1A on mil sci-fi, and Nick is 1B. and he is 1A on fantasy and I'm 1B. So he has this ability to articulate everything Forgotten Ruins so much better than me that I'm fine just to let him roll.
Yeah.
Speaking of rolling, where did you guys come up with some of the concepts for these monsters? Because looking through the advanced copy that might have fallen off the back of a truck.
Yeah.
Because you knew a guy.
Well, I'm that guy. So, you're the guy. Some interesting concepts as far as the monsters go, like Scorpion Centaur. You know, just the look of that, the artist did a really bang up job. And the Qatari Cat Warrior, yeah. You get this sense of. You know, you get this sense of something familiar from like MMOs and stuff like that. But at the same time, there's just a hint of different as they get that like that almost mummified, you know, they get the elongated neck thing going on. I mean, can you talk about how you develop some of the monsters and how has there been any interaction with these monsters yet with players and in using the rules?
James did run like one game at Gamehole and he said everybody loved it. So that was we actually haven't got to play our own game yet. So that'll be.
He's been holding out on you.
Yeah, he's been. Well, I mean, like, you know, like Jason and I could run it, but we would win constantly. And so it's we want someone to kill us while playing our own game. The way that when we were talking, you know, we told James, okay, we need a monster manual with this. But at the same time, we're writing the books and we know the monsters that we have in there. So Jason developed this tribe of orcs called the, I always get the name wrong. What do you call them, Jason?
The Kumbadi.
Yeah, the Kumbadi. It can look a little obscene. But, you know, we wanted to make, and the first book is set in sort of what would be called Egypt, but we call it the Desert of Sleep or the Kingdom of Sut, the Undying. So you know you're going to get mummies and liches and everything like that. And we always wanted to do something kind of fractured and weird. So somehow Jason came up with albino orcs because we kind of liked Mad Max, the new one with the war boys and stuff like that. So we developed those. We were going into more traditional, like, okay, James, we want these monsters. We want orcs. We want werewolves. We want vampires. And James is, he's really interesting. Like, he's one of the most interesting people you can follow on Facebook. He's completely honest. Like, he's had diabetes and had his foot cut off. He's had all these fights, you know, with gaming legends and TSR and how he developed things and corporate shenanigans. And I've never seen someone talk so unabashedly honest about himself and about the culture. So he's interesting in that respect. He's interesting in a lot of respects, but he wanted to stay away from the classic D&D monsters. And so when we said, okay, this is the kingdom that initially the adventurers come out of is called the Kadios, think Rome. He took that and sort of ran at warp speed with that, like more than we probably wanted. But then we were like pleasantly surprised. So I would say 90% of the monsters that are in there are and James is a historian too, are actually like from Roman mythology. So the scorpion centaur, the ant lion, the lion-headed giant, like all this stuff was from Roman mythology, but like super obscure, like not the classic stuff, but like things that people were afraid of and horror stories. And so then we had to go over to our artist, who's Mike Corley, who is actually the lead artist on the lore series. And he's a personal friend of Jason's and mine. And he loves to draw monsters. So we said, okay, just turn loose on these monsters. The Qatari were just a one-off that we thought up at the last second. We thought, like, wouldn't it be cool to have cat, because the Egyptians worshipped cats. Wouldn't it be cool to have cat ninjas? And so that's why they look
so. I'll tell you how to say cat ninjas. I mean, interview's over. I'm fucking.
No, he's not going to sleep tonight now.
Yeah. Shit, I haven't slept since last night.
Yeah.
I didn't even know about cat ninjas then.
Yeah. Now you can't sleep because they're kind of Egyptian, you know, working with the mummy people and stuff like that.
Thanks, because Nick, that's. I'm going to have to fucking draw immediately after this. I'm going to have to draw your cat ninjas with an Egyptian theme.
Exactly. I'll send you the picture.
God, no, it's more work.
Not to be a really sweet. And so the big bads in this universe are this Saurian race of lizard people called the Saur. So just think lizard men. And they basically took over the world and became pharaohs and built this massive thing. But they're all sleeping in the desert now. And that's why the murder hobos are going down to take their stuff. But the cat ninjas are kind of still guarding everything because they're the guardians. And so that's the Qatari. And you know, we hope to, we'll probably be forced to make a good Qatari who's learned the error of his ways and helps the Rangers. That would be fun.
We can call him Skriz.
Yes. Yeah,
which is incidentally a character that Jason has been trying to kill since book one.
I stopped.
I literally had to go in like some death penalty lawyer and advocate for Jason not killing this character.
Yeah.
So the Rangers go in and find the leader of the Northern Alliance and create an alliance.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm in.
Qatari. Yeah, you'll like the picture. The art, you know what? Mike Corley is truly a great artist. It's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I just wanted to say there's kind of a Harryhausen sort of vibe going on with the art. Was that intentional?
He was Mike's microphone is a little muted.
Sorry. I was just saying there's kind of a Harryhausen Sinbad kind of vibe to the art. Was that intentional?
I would say Jason is our art critic because so often my instincts on art are horribly wrong, Jason.
Yeah, so I mean that style is definitely Mike's style. Like if you go and look at his portfolio, that's the kind of line art he does. But since that first book does take place in this sort of Egyptian desert wasteland, like the art direction he would get from Nick a lot of times would be like, "Hey, do kobolds, but Egyptian." Like, you know, and so, but Mike ran with
it. Give them turbans and camels
So Mike ran with it, but I'd have to ask him if that's a direct influence. But knowing Mike, who is such a monster lover and aficionado, like, you know, for him, like the ultimate Friday night is to finish up a commission or finish up a cover and then just sit and watch an old classic monster movie. Yeah. And he loves it. So I think that that is definitely where he was drawing inspiration from, just from seeing what he did. But I can't confirm it officially.
And I would just say this, if there were like a stop motion claymation Harryhausen MMO, you know, where it looked like that, I'd play the hell out of that game.
Oh, fuck yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Sinbad, Jason the Argonauts, Clash of Titans. I mean, all that shit.
So that's awesome. The feel. And we wanted to keep those monsters looking like that. But it's just, it's cool. It's a weird triumvirate of Mike's vision in ancient history, you know, and that was cool. Like initially I balked and I was like, no, James, I want D&D. You know, he's like, no, you don't. You actually, cause you'll get sued. And I'm like, oh, okay. So I can't have beholders. And he's like, no, you'll really get sued for that. And I'm like, and I can't have the mind flayer. He's like, no, you'll get super sued for that one. I'm like, okay, give me the ant lion, which initially I was like, this is goofy, but then it's pretty terrifying actually.
Jason, are you a graphic designer by chance? Because that's like our motto. The client tells us what they want, and we give them what they need.
So I've done some graphic design, but I'm not a graphic designer.
That's kind of like our mantra right there when you walk the halls of any art school.
No. So it's like I grew up wanting to draw comics. Like my life plan when I was in middle school was like move to San Diego.
You made the right choice not doing it. You made the right choice.
Yeah, no, I know, but I was all set on moving to San Diego and working for Image because when I was a kid like that, they had just started up. And I was like, oh, this is great. I'm gonna make my own Spawn and only it'll be like Ninja Turtles, which apparently I didn't see why that was a problem. but I never practiced enough for my skill set to get there. But I feel like I got high enough that I can see the quality in art. Like I know why art works or doesn't work from a conceptual level. So I tend to work with our artists because I speak their language a little bit. And that's not to shortchange Nick because Nick has come up with some fantastic concepts for covers. But sometimes the artists go and ask me in back channels, like, so what does he want?
Hey, yeah. Remember, you know, like when he asked me to describe the Z, I said they're space Muslim donkeys.
Yeah, so I clarified. I was like, space ISIS. Space yes. ISIS.
Space ISIS. Space ISIS.
Like, okay.
They look like donkeys.
Give me that.
give me that right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, those were really fun, especially because you can totally. I mean, we're on a live broadcast, so I'm not going to get too crazy because that's Nick's job. But
which Nick?
Yep. So so I mean, you know, when you go to a foreign country as working for the United States government, and you start interacting with the locals, eventually you're going to have that one guy, and he's going to give him the nickname that sticks. And you know, we saw it in Vietnam, we saw it over in the Middle East. And you know, when I believe the first time I saw it was Masters, in one of the books starts calling them donks. And I'm like, oh my God, that's brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, just because you're gonna find a way to disparage the people who are shooting at you. You know that, and on Sidon. Am I saying that correctly? Sidon.
Yeah.
They have those they have the native species there, and everybody calls them Dobies because they look like giant rabid Dobermans. And I'm like, yep, that's exactly what you're gonna get. Are we gonna get that kind of feel to Forgotten Ruin as well?
I definitely think so. And again, I have, you know, like I, it's Jason actually came up with both of those nicknames. So that, yeah, I got to give credit where, but like when I didn't.
So he's the racist. Got it. Yep.
Donkeys, no, I didn't create the Z. I just gave him the nickname.
Calling him donks. I'm like, that's more insensitive than I ever try to be. I think, okay. So, you know, the crux of Forgotten Ruin is that, you know, somehow there was a giant, this is just spoilers for everybody, but somehow this is about 10,000 years in Earth's future and everything's gone D&D. But, you know, why is the 75th still around? Why are they still acting as a major organization that's curating the world? And so you use those identifiers, you know, that people take as slang or bad because it's a short speak that makes sense. So yeah. As we develop, you know, it's the burden is now on Jason to come up for something denigrating for the Kumbo tea, you know.
Well, you know, anybody watch Space Above and Beyond when that was on?
Yeah, I did. Yeah.
Okay, the chicks. That was the ethnic slur for what they were fighting.
Right.
You know, in that series was the chicks. You know, and I think that. I didn't really appreciate it when I watched it because I was like in high school when it first came out. But when I joined the military and I got to go to great exotic and foreign lands and meet exotic people and then kill them, you know, and that really hit me when I started watching the series again. Right. Was, you know, you had the Chigs, and then when I went to Egypt, they called him Siddiqis, which is the Arab word for friend, but we turned it into a negative. You know, we get to Iraq, it's Hajis, you know, things like that. You know, yeah. I think that's it brings a touch of realism to it that really connects to anybody that's kind of in the know or knows somebody that's in the know into, you know, the realm that you're creating.
Yes, that's cool exactly thing. It. That's the cool thing about being what we call new pub writers or indie writers. And I was for a little while with Trade Pub. That's something that they would never let you get away with just because everything's so precious now. But, you know, you can either write the fantasy of what everybody wants the world to be, or you can write it the way that it is. You know, it's what we've noticed is that readers like you appreciate it when there's the honesty to be brutally, I don't know, you know, brutal about it. But that's the way that the world is. And if you don't think that they don't have names for us, you know.
Oh, absolutely.
It's just the way the world works. It's just a shorthand for like, hey, those guys over there, you know. It's just, you know, it's fine to call everybody a gringo.
Well, and it's something that has happened throughout the entire course of human history, and warfare is a way to somewhat make your enemy less than or dehumanize them. I mean, you're using an ancient Egypt concept in some of the story. You know, that's something that was really prominent in ancient Egypt society, was to dehumanize their enemies, which made it easy for them to enslave them and kill them and use them in ritual sacrifice and all these other things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
okay, and if I let my intelligence get away from me on that one, I'm really not.
Yeah, but if you're gonna gin up the mild amount of rage or whatever trigger solution you need to pull on somebody, it can't be, hey, pour fire on that wonderfully enlightened soul over there who's a dreamer and trying to come up with
and what they will cure cancer. No, he's gonna throw a bottle at me and I'm gonna have to tear gas his ass.
Yeah, you got to tell the 18-year-old kid this is what in a very short amount of time this is why you need to hate that guy. Shoot,
right?
You know,
pull the trigger.
Yeah,
stack bodies. Raw.
It's all good.
Yeah. So you're gonna get six books of fantasy rangers doing that thing. The trick is just not is what we're trying to disabuse people of thinking of Aragorn or, you know, like Legolas too. Like, yeah,
they're these types of rangers.
They will have the medieval version of a can of dip in their hand.
There you go. Presented to you by Copenhagen.
Yeah, exactly. Is that chewable hobbit weed?
Yeah, exactly. What we should do is we should take a page from Black Rifle and make our own can of dip.
Oh, that, I won't chew it, but I'll definitely have one on the shelf with the rest of the collectibles.
I'll chew it. I'll chew the shit out of it.
Yeah, weren't you stuffing your lip with Black Rifle coffee about an hour ago?
Me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, something to cut down the sweet of the whiskey.
Yeah, I have a problem. My problem is that I'm not drinking anymore.
Yeah. Well, you have that appointment at 1300.
Right, my helicopter.
Yep. I know Mike Lafferty, if he wants to chime in, is probably going to want to ask that burning publisher question he always has.
Oh, shit. Here it comes.
I really love the sentient cactus.
I was thinking more along the lines of, say you got guys like Mike Lafferty, who is a publisher of role-playing games and third-party material, and he sees Forgotten Ruin, and he falls in love with the system and says, this is amazing. Are there going to be ways to license that so he can then have Egyptian cat ninjas in space or superhero sentient cactus? Sorry, that's a trademark thing. I'd strike that.
Patent pending.
Yeah, Jason's forbidden me from talking business or art, so Jason.
Yeah, this is a working partner. Right, exactly, yeah. No, we know our strengths. Yeah, we're definitely open for that kind of thing. And the reason being, Nick and I made a commitment as soon as Legionnaire and Galactic Outlaws really took off. We made a commitment that, the main thing for us is writing books. Like, that's the one thing that the two of us do that other people can't do for us. And so there's been a lot of people that have come along and said, hey, we want to do a comic book. We just need this much of your life. And we've said, no, we can't do that. Mm-hmm. We want a video game, but we just need this much of your life. And it's been the same thing. So in doing this, our primary motivation is to get people interested in the IP. But we both are realists. Like, Nick is not going to become the CEO of a gaming company, and neither am I, because we don't have the time to do it. So one of the things that Nick has been trying to develop through our alphas is just to have the ability to say, all right, we know we're starting off for free. But if this really takes off and people love it, yeah, we want to find a way to monetize future adventures and things like that. And so at that point, yeah, I mean, we're all ears, because neither one of us can afford to sit down and say, all right, we're just going to write all this content and we're already running a publisher. So we can't run a game developer at the same time, if that makes sense. So yeah, I guess that's a yes.
We'll talk later.
I tried to develop a little team over on Discord, and it's all, like, for the love, and everybody's doing good and having fun with that. But like James has already told us, you need to do 4 products a year. So we want to go that direction, unless it's just a colossal flop and everybody's like, this sucks, then we'll walk away from that. The biggest thing is, like, everybody keeps asking us for a Galaxy's Edge game. And we don't know how or what to do. I mean, I think Jason has some ideas. I've always been, like, sort of suspicious of space games, because it's like Traveler. All it really, like, I mean, you could do all these things, but at the end of the day, it just turns into D&D in space. And you can't really do that with Galaxy's Edge, because people are going to want to play Legionnaires. My input is I wanted to make a Legionnaire version of Squad Leader, but with some role-playing elements. That would be fun. So that, I think right now that's our, like, if anybody, like, if a publisher wanted to pitch us or even help us develop a Galaxy's Edge, we know, like, there is a want and a desire for that. And again, this was my business decision. I heard that want and specific desire for a Galaxy's Edge role-playing game. And I was like, what you really want is Forgotten Ruin, which is a whole different thing. So yeah, but comics. Yeah. Who wants to talk comics? Let's talk comics.
Yeah. Nick's got you all day long.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. He inserted creepy voice.
Oh, yeah. You want me to draw space operators? I'll do that all goddamn day. I love drawing that.
Hey, Jason, just in case no one's told you, the real money is in board games and card games, right?
I've heard that Wizards of the Coast does pretty well for themselves.
But as Mike and myself can tell you, little guys like ourselves, we make just enough to have that cup of coffee on Friday once a year.
Hey, man, don't disparage the free coffee.
It's true.
Working for beans.
Yeah. So before we wrap this up and call it a podcast, because you guys have been super.
It froze.
I think Walt is dead.
They got Walt.
Oh my God. I gotta go to the armory.
They got him. Now the whole thing falls apart. But he probably was going to fill in our links, so I'll do that, and Jason will protect me.
Yeah.
Yeah, the bummer is I can't end the phone call.
because Walt is the host. Until he comes back.
It just has to go on forever.
Yeah, it's all right. We're on bonus time. It's fine.
But if you want that, if anybody's listening and you want that free short story, and here's the really cool thing about that. Go over to galacticoutlaws.com, give us your email, and sign over your firstborn and your soul.
You're going to have both my kids.
We will give you an ebook. But here's the better
thing. Back.
Walt's back. The better thing is that R.C. Bray actually recorded the audio version of that. And that is probably about a good, 30-minute listen. And so you get a free audio book out of that over at galacticoutlaws.com. Sign up for that. Walt, we were filling while you were gone.
Right. Sorry about that. Cat ninjas. Fuck.
What are you going to do?
That's what you do.
Are you guys, were you guys just giving your credentials? That way people can find you?
Yes. Jason was filling in the things that I was going to miss. Jason, what else did we miss?
No, that's the big one. You can go to galacticoutlaws.com. If that's too hard for you to remember or spell, you can go to inthelegion.com. That'll take you to the same place. But that's going to get you a launching point for just about everything. We do have a website for Forgotten Ruin called forgottenruin.com. And you can sign up for a newsletter there. There's not too much happening yet, but if you're on that newsletter, then when we make that final version of the RPG available, you're going to get a free copy through that.
Boom. Yeah.
And if you guys DM me, I'll get you over to the Discord and get you guys, and you guys can join in on the beta this weekend.
Awesome. That sounds great. Would you be up for us broadcasting that?
If you guys can figure out how to do it, that would be awesome.
Well, can you do that?
Yes, I can do that.
That's going to be on roll 20. Is that how you do it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, shouldn't we be broadcast the hell out of that.
Yeah. Oh, hey, just so you guys know, I mean, don't say yes or no, just think about it. I've got the domain. I just reserved it while we were talking. Hard men doing hard things with elves. Wide open opportunities. Mull it over. Get back to me, all right?
Well,
yeah. I think
conflict adaptation, maybe we'll call it that.
That's pretty good. That's actually my Twitter handle.
Just changed it.
Oh my God. So Jason, Nick, thank you so much for coming out today and actually spending a little time sharing what you've been doing as far as Forgotten Ruin goes. Is there anything you guys want to cover right before we call it a podcast?
No, just, I mean, I'm glad that we finally got invited. Thanks.
Yeah.
Finally. Oh, crap. Yeah. If I had known that, I would have had you on long before then.
Yeah. Anytime someone has a show and they don't immediately ask me, I'm like, what's wrong with this guy? Does he know who I am?
Oh, don't feel bad. I'm super famous. It took me years.
I always rate the other people you have on against me and be like, oh, I'm not as good as that guy.
That's good. No, you are far more successful than I am, sir.
Mike, anything to add before we call it a show?
No, I'm good. It's a pleasure having you guys on. Thank you very much for showing up.
Yeah, it was awesome.
And Nick, anything shouting out for Apogee Comics before we fly?
Yeah, 8 days left on the Bengali issue 2 Kickstarter. We are so far away from our goal. Please help me out. I hate to sound like desperate, but I kind of am. But even if it fails, you know how I'm going to be. Ranger's going to Ranger. I'm going to reconsolidate, reorganize, and come out with something even better. That's going to make me want to just say, jump and give me your money.
Can you give me the elevator pitch on that real quick? And then if it's cool, Jason, because Jason and I are super always pro. I served. Jason's dad was a very senior military intelligence NCO. So we're super, super, you know, pro military. And because you are, we could share, right, Jason?
Oh, that would be awesome. That would be great.
Yeah.
Give us, what's the elevator pitch on it real quick?
The elevator pitch isn't. It's the story of a man that was dying who gets propositioned by an ancient evil that is embodied in a mask. And since the mask is inherently evil and the person was inherently good, we start getting a conflict when the mask meets the host and he becomes a superhero for the time being. And as the story progresses, it's going to get more dark. Think stories like Haunt, Spawn, you know, things like that. A little touch of Venom, you know, all my inspirations as a child growing up in comics, you know, and it ties into the bigger Apogee universe.
Sweet. Okay. Which well, I think I'll talk with Jason, but like, let's share that with the massive Galaxy's Edge audience because veterans like to help veterans.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, we do.
Right on. So I just want to once again thank you guys so much again for coming out. You guys have been fantastic, very generous with your time. Mike and Ranger Nick, thank you for coming out. No Jason problem. And Forgotten Ruin Nick, I can't thank you guys enough again. And with that, bamf, and we're out.